So we've been involved in the building of the Mishkan for a couple of parshiyot now, collecting the materials, donating the materials, artisans building, and the truth is, it's probably too much detail for us. In Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Vav, there's a verse which I would like to interpret in a positive sense. I unfortunately think that there may actually also be a negative, but you can decide if you like it in a positive or a negative. The people who were involved in making the donations or bringing the donations were apparently very, very motivated. When I say very motivated, they were very excited about doing this, and they were very generous, to the point that we have in the first source on the page there, Vayitzav Moshe. Moshe gave an order. Vayaviu kol b'machane lemor ish visho al yasu od melacha l'trumat hakodesh v'kalei am mehavi. That they finally had to give out a send a message. They go, enough, stop. More than enough donations have come in. This is probably the last time such a thing was ever said by a Jewish organization. But I actually saw somebody put together a shiur on the halacha for this week's parsha. The topic of the shiur was, what do you do with excess donations to a charity, whatever? So I just assume this is what we call Hilchata de Mashiach. This is one of these laws that when Mashiach comes, we'll have to deal with it. But over here, we're told that Moshe gives an order. Again, this is a response to the previous pasuk where they're told that just too many things came in. Vayitzav Moshe v'ivru kol b'machaneh, and a sound was heard or in the camp saying, men and women, don't do more work. That's it, to donations. We have enough. Vayikalei ha'am milavi. They kalei Rashi says loshon miniyah. They were prevented. It's almost, you see the word prison in there. Kalei means held back. They were held back from giving any more. Now the reason I said that maybe there's a negative to this, or maybe that the negative is really the reason why we need the positive, is that we also found an outpouring of generosity when it came to building the Egel. So I don't know what to say with this. On the one, if you want to be negative, I can say, you know, Jews are motivated and they're generous to silly causes, which is still true today, and they're generous. Jews are generous people. Or I can say that maybe this is a tikkun for that. And again, that all goes back to the issue of what the sequence of events are.
If you make the chesed, they contributed very little.
To which? To this?
When you look at Vayakel
and Pekudei, really, next week. Yeah. It wasn't all that much.
Compared to what they owned and what they took out of Mitzrayim,
yeah,
it was nothing. It was insignificant, the contribution. So the generosity issue.
So you, okay, fine. There that went, if you don't think they were so generous. The word v'yikale, what? The word v'yikale, the Balaturim points out, is twice used in the text, and we'll look at the other one in a second, but he also says something which goes back to support you about perhaps the lack of generosity and how much they had. V'yikale, hacha, it's written here, sorry, Balaturim says Ve'ekalei Shnayim. It's written twice. Hacha over here, Ve'ekalei Amilahavi. Ve'idach, and the other time it is Ve'ekalei Hageshem, which is the end of the flood. So hold on to that. I'm going to try to explain that in a second. Zeh Shadorshu Shuyodim Lehem Avanim Tovotu Margaliot Im Haman He Vimlin Devat Hamishkan. And therefore, the connection between the two is the rain stops falling. So over here, what does that have to do with stopping to bring things? So he claims that there's he says there's a teaching that says that where do they get all the precious things from? So it says that the precious stones fell from heaven. They fell from heaven, so everybody had enough in order to give. I'm not going to get into a technical halachic discourse on this. Because if you need to bring a particular stone and that stone falls from heaven, is that really that stone, or is that something which is made for magic and considered to be that stone? I mean, for that matter, does man, which falls from heaven, is that considered to be bread? What bracha do you make on man? Do you say hamotzi lechem in haaretz on man? Or perhaps do you say hamotzi lechem in hashamayim on man? Or do you say borei minei mizonot? Oh, by the way, there are opinions about all of these things. So I'm not going to go any more into the halacha right now of this, because I'm going to bore you with halacha as we move on. So I don't need to do more than necessary. In source 4, we have the the context of the other v'yikalei, Vayizkor Elokim et Noach, v'et kol ha'chaya, v'et kol ha'behema, asher ito ba'teva, v'yaver Elokim ruach al ha'aretz, v'yishoku ha'mayim. V'yizkur ma'yanot tahom v'arbot ha'shamayim, v'yikale ha'geshem min ha'shamayim. And the rain from heaven stopped. Now, is there any kind of parallel over here? So let me go back to something that I believe I've said before. When we look at the Mishkan itself, the Mishkan is very detailed and, of course, very boring, but it does create for us a comparison because it has to do with building, construction. So there are, to this point, two different models in terms of construction. I'll skip the first one for a moment, but the second model of construction is the ark. Over here you have a world which has sinned, a world which needs to be, you can decide how you want it, either destroyed or cleansed. I mean, there are those, especially within Kabbalistic sources, that see the whole flood as some kind of a mikveh coming to cleanse the entire world. And the construction over here is taking place in order to save the world from, or whatever remnant will be saved. I can draw a parallel if I see the Mishkan is coming after the Chet HaEgel. I have sin, I have construction and salvation based upon this. So I do have some kind of a parallel between the two. Now, what's the other parallel that I could have drawn? The other parallel would have been the other construction that takes place in Bereshit, and that's creation, whereby I can see God's creation of the world versus man's creation of the Mishkan, and some kind of parallel over there. And there's a lot to do with that. Yes.
You can also compare the Tower of Babel and the...
Correct. Correct. Okay, correct. Correct. There would be a third... Yes. So, the Gemara does something very unexpected with this verse. And as I said, we're going to talk about halacha, so this Gemara is going to take us into halacha. The Gemara in source number 5, and you have it in English as well, in case you think that'll be easier for you. Michti, the Gemara says, consider zrika tolda dehotsahi. We're talking about the laws of Shabbat. In the laws of Shabbat, one of the things that we're not permitted to do, which we sometimes forget unless we have massive snowstorms, is that we're not allowed to carry on Shabbat from a Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, from a private area to a public area. You're not allowed to carry within a public area more than 4 amot. And you're not allowed to throw as well, over here, throw an object across the, let's say, from one Rishut to the other, or from within the Rishut HaRabim 4 amot. This Gemara starts and says, Zrika, throwing something, Tolada, is a subcategory, Dehotsahi, of carrying. The Gemara then says, Hotsa Gufa, Hechaktiva, that you're not allowed to carry, where is it written? Now, this is a very strange question. The reason why it's a very strange question is that for the most part, the 39 Melachot are not written. For the most part, it says, don't do malacha, and we then learn, actually we learn from this week's parsha, for the most part, the malachot. Any of you who've ever dealt with any kind of scientific study will know that sometimes you have words, you don't know the meaning of the words, what you need is an operational definition. Over here it says, don't do malacha, we need an operational definition of the word malacha. So what do we find? That in the construction of the Mishkan, here in Vayakel, Perek Lamed Hey, Lamed Vav, the word melacha, melechet, is used multiple times. I mean, more, dozens of times, really, the word is used. Just pay attention as during the Torah reading on Shabbat. You'll see the word melacha used again and again and again and again. So the rabbis understood that the work which was done for creation of the Mishkan is the things that you can't do on Shabbat. Now, of course, that does require a further question, which I don't want to get into today. And that is why? What is the intrinsic relationship between the two? Why are the laws of Shabbat derived? Now again, if I go back to what I said before, that the construction of the world and the construction of the Mishkan have some kind of parallel between them, so that would be the first step towards beginning to understand it. But this is something that I've written about, I've spoken about before, so I don't want to go too far into this. I do want to point out another thing, and that is our parsha begins, by the way, he gave everyone except for me the sources. But it's okay. I have you. Our parsha, you have more now?
Yeah, sure.
Our parsha actually begins with the words Vayakel, where is that? In source 15. Vayakel Moshe called up in Israel. Moshe gathers the entire children of Israel. Vayomer lehem, says them, Elad v'rim ha-shetzif ha-shem la'asot otam. These are the things that God commanded to do. Shesha imim tasem alacha, for 6 days you should do work. Uviyom ha-shviyeh lechem kodesh, Shabbat, Shabbaton la'ashem, kol osem alacha yumat. Over here it says, these are the things that God said. Now again, let's go back to the context over here. The context is very interesting or very challenging. Moshe has come down now after being up in heaven two or three times. Moshe brings down the second luchot. He says, okay, this is what God commanded. And when you think about it, you realize that Moshe really has 613 different places he could start his discourse. He starts with Shabbat, says 3-4 verses about Shabbat, and then goes back into the Mishkan. So why start with Shabbat? Why gather the whole people together? Why Shabbat, particularly over here? Now, one thing which we tend to lose focus on, and that is if you were to go back all the way to right before the Chayta Egel, the last thing that was taught was Shabbat. The last thing that God teaches Moshe before he tells him, by the way, the people have messed up, is Shabbat. So if I take away the whole Chayta Egel narrative, I'm left, the last thing that God says is Shabbat. The first thing Moshe says is Shabbat. So I see some kind of a connection. And there's probably more to explore in terms of Shabbat really being an antidote to idolatry. Okay, and there's a lot about this in Chazal as well, that whoever keeps Shabbat is a test that God created the world. Whoever doesn't keep Shabbat, a test that God didn't create the world. Whoever doesn't keep Shabbat, it's as if they're an idolater. Whoever keeps Shabbat is as if, you know, not as if, they are attesting to monotheism. There is one interesting word which is used in the Chayta Egel, and that is Moshe ish lo yadanu me'yalo. We don't know what happened to Moshe, which I think is really ends up the key word, because they really want to know where Moshe is, they want to know where God is, they want to see God, they want to feel God, and that's why they end up making the Egel. It does say in these verses, right before Moshe comes down, I believe it's in Perek Lamed Aleph, it talks about Shabbat, and one of the words which is used there is in order to know God. That if you want to know God, you don't need to make an egel. You want to know God. You want to experience God, as it were, which I think is a better use of the word dat. You want to experience God, then the way to experience God is through Shabbat. So it's almost like you have a kodem refuah lamakah. You want to experience God, then you have Shabbat, and then the people make the egel. Now Moshe comes down again and says, listen, you want to experience God, the way you experience God is through Shabbat. Okay. Let's get back to our Gemara over here. The Gemara in source 5 says, okay, so where is it written? So now, generally, we don't have the writing of the 39 malachot. We have this thing, don't make malacha, connected to the Mishkan, and that's as far as it goes. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, da'amar kra, where do we see that hotzah, carrying, is written? It says, Vayitzav Moshe, Moshe gave an order, Vayavir kol b'machaneh, and a sound went throughout the camp. Now, hold it. What does this have to do with carrying? Moshe heichen havayativ. Where was Moshe standing at that point? Yativ is generally sitting. Where was Moshe at that point? B'machane Leviya. Moshe would be in the machane of the Levites. U'machane Leviya reshut harabim havai. And that would have been a reshut harabim. V'ka'amu liYisrael, he says, lo tafkidu v'teitu mirishut yachid didchu l'reshut harabim. And therefore the instruction therefore comes down, don't bring any more things, becomes don't carry things from your reshut to this reshut, and it ends up being don't carry. By the way, I hope you all appreciate, the Gemara seems to be, in my mind, working very hard to try to say, oh, this is how we know you can't carry on Shabbat. Mimai de Shabbat kai, Dilma b'chol kai, how do you know it was Shabbat? Maybe it was during the week. Mishum d'shleim ala malacha, kidichtiv amalacha etadayim. Gomar havara havara miyom kippurim. But also in Yom Kippurim, there's a sound that goes throughout the camp. So the reason the sound goes throughout the camp, the Gemara ends up telling us over here that it must have been Shabbat. So as I said, the Gemara works hard, ends up establishing that you can't carry on Shabbat, you can't carry Shabbat based upon our verse. Yeah. You can certainly make that argument. Take a look at source number 6.
That would be more.
That could also be, yeah. Correct. Correct. But you have source number 6 is the Chizkuni. Chizkuni says, "Vayaviru kol b'machane, vayichrizu, kimo mavirim im Hashem." Mikan Omer Rabbeinu, or Mikan Omer Rabbeinu, la asur hotza'a b'Shabbat mirishut l'rishut. Right, that's exactly what you just saw in the Gemara. From here, the rabbis learned you're not allowed to carry from one place to another. V'gamir havara havara miyom kippurim. But in order to do this, they also need to make this analogy with Yom Kippur. K'tiv hachav aviv kol b'machan, v'k'tiv hachav avar shofar trua. Ma lahalan yom asur, afkan yom asur. Al yasu od melacha v'yichtov v'chalei amayavi mikan samchor abotenu shehava'a melachahi. So here the rabbis, it's interesting the way that he's quoting it, samchu rabotenu. The rabbis made what's called an asmachta. It sounds like the Chizkuni is not completely convinced that what we're dealing with is a 100% real limud, real derivation, but rather an association. The Gemara does that at times. It makes an association. On the other hand, there are others who are quite convinced that this is in fact, a real association. I do want to point out, we'll come back to the other sources in the middle in a second, but I want to point out at source number 10. Source number 10 is all the way back when the Jews first left Egypt. This is when the month starts to fall, and it says, "Ru'u ki Hashem natan lechem ha-shabbat, akeinu noten lechem b'yom ha-shishi lechem yomayim, Shvu ish tachtav al yetzei ish memkomo b'yom ha-shabbat." Right? B'yom ha-shvi'i. That people collect a double portion on Friday. Right? That's why we have two chalot on the table, double portion on Friday. And it says, al yetzei ish memkomo. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, miktiv al yotzi, al yotza ktiv. It doesn't say lo yotzi, it says yetze. That's what's written. From this line of the Gemara, which I know is much more difficult because I really just took it out of the whole context in Erevin, but look at Rashi because he's going to explain it and give us a little more information, source 12. Lav shenitan lazar mitat beitin hu, desalka daitech al yotzi hu, v'nafgalan hotza'a, Mirishut l'rishut minei, v'hi av malachahi umamitin aleha. That Rashi understands incorrectly. This is what the Gemara means over here. The Gemara says, how do I know I'm not allowed to carry from rishut to rishut on Shabbat? So it brought this verse over here, which basically means, regarding hotza'ah, carrying, we have two separate sources that the Gemara says in two different cases, this is the source they're not allowed to carry. One was an arrow parsha, and the other one is back over there. Al yitzei, a person shouldn't go out, means that you shouldn't be carrying, because within the context over here is, it's not that you can't walk out of your house. You could be, you can argue you can't walk out of the tchum, right? But what was the main point over here, contextually? It is that you don't go collecting, right? It says, well, just put the whole verse together. Don't go collecting things on Shabbat. A person shouldn't go out. So it says, hold it. What does one thing after the other? It means, no, you can't carry from one rishut to the other. That's the way the Gemara is understanding this. As I told you before, I told you I'm going to bore you with technical halacha things. Let us have what's called a temporary conclusion. What do we know now? We know that of the 39 melachot, one of the 39 melachot is that you can't carry. Why you can't carry? Well, now we have multiple verses for this. Now, this itself is a little strange because vast majority of the 39 commandments, we don't have any verse, and now for this one, we find what we have two verses. Now, why we may have two verses may be connected to what we're going to read in source 8 and, we can read it in 7, 8, and 9 because they all say the same thing. In source number 7, which is the Gemara back where we started to learn about Hotza Gufa Hechtiva, the Afa Gav Shaitab Mishkan, Kidamarhim Horidu Krashim Me Agala. So now let's pause a second. If all of the laws of Shabbat are derived from the Mishkan, one of the things they did in the Mishkan was they would take down these big, they would carry things. So it says it's very clear that this is one of the things you're going to do. So why do I need a verse? Again, Malacha is derived from the Mishkan, so I have something in the Mishkan. So he writes, Mikol makom ilav dichtiv lo hava mechayve ala lefisha malacha gruahi. That nonetheless, we would have thought that you're really not guilty for this, because it is a malacha grua. Now that, I hope all of you, it strikes all of you as a very strange phrase. Tosfot is saying over here that carrying is a malacha grua. So let's first translate. How would you translate grua? What does garua mean? Bad. So bad means, in this context, it's not a real malacha. It's inadequate malacha. Maybe that's the best way to explain grua. It's an inadequate malacha. Now, what makes it inadequate? Tosfot doesn't say clearly, and there may be multiple ways to understand it, but I want to read, because this is not the only time Tosfot says this. He says it lots of times, in fact. Look at source number 8, right at the beginning of Masechet Shabbat, which, by the way, begins with Hotza'ah. Of all the 39 melachot, Shabbat begins with carrying from one place to the other. Could have started with a lot of other places. It could have started with planting and plowing and harvesting and so on, but it starts with carrying. V'od meferish Rabbeinu Tam. So now we're going to learn that this teaching about melachot grua goes back to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam said, "Dipatach b'yitziot." The mesechta of Shabbat begins with taking things out from one area to the other. And it had to come and teach that even a tailor can't even carry the littlest of needles, which is the case which is mentioned right there in the Gemara. Afal gav de lo shna hamilabin mishum einot nim kelim lekoves velo mavir mishum b'metomim. We had to teach the law of carrying even more than other things needed to be taught. Because carrying, should we say inadequate again, is an inadequate malacha. It's grua, it's a bad malacha. It's not a real malacha, as I will yet explain. So now we understand, just one more second, that this idea that it's an inadequate malacha comes from Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is the one who first teaches it. Nigra is a slightly different word. Grua is bad. And we also sometimes have to be careful about biblical Hebrew versus Talmudic, or certainly a Rishon using it, so it's a much later usage, but it doesn't seem to be that it's just a little less. But the connotation is not all that far off from what you're saying. But still, we find this again and again. And by the way, this phrase regarding carrying does come up again and again and again. Tosfot, a little later on. What?
No, I'm saying why.
I'll explain. You see, in the next source, Tosfot again writes, Mishum deot samalacha gru'ahi, demali motzim rishud ha-yachid rishud ha-rab, demali motzim rishud ha-yachid rishud ha-yachid. And then he goes on, v'teidan, you should know, midi itzdrich trei krei b'hotza. Rabbeinu Tam is very well aware of what I just now pointed out to you. What's that? There's two different sources for it. He goes, we need two sources for it. Kidenafgal and b'resh hazorek, like we learned in the chapter which is called hazorek, mi v'yachaleh ha'amilavi, which is our pasuk where we started, uv'sof perakamad erev, in the end of the first chapter of erev, and it says, nafgalan mikra achrina, learns it from a different one, didarshin and al yitzei, Ishmim komo, al yotzi, v'hatam pirashti, v'hainu mishum de malacha gurahi, itzrich travaihu. And because it's such a weak malacha, it needed two verses. By the way, I do want to stress this. Most of the malachot don't have even one verse. We just learned by the connection with the Mishkan. And over here, we're learning that when it comes to carrying, we need two verses for it. Why? Because he's telling, because it's so weak. Right? It needs both. And the way Tosfot explains it here, the ani and the ashir, by the way, is not really an ani and not really an ashir, but the person, let's just say you have a house and you have a window. So you have the person outside the house, the person inside the house. So the way that it teaches it, which is just a very interesting model, and it's probably what to be said about this, is there's certainly what to be said about this, is that the imagination of the Mishnah and the Gemara over here is the person inside the house is the Ashir, and the person outside the house is the Ani. And why would you put something out the window or out the door, for that matter? Why? Because you want to give them food. So you have a piece of bread, so you hand the bread. You have the chicken, you hand the chicken out. So the Ashir gives to the Ani. So that's a very nice thing to do on Shabbat. By the way, what's a nicer way to do it on Shabbat? Invite him to sit by your table. And that could be somewhat of a nicer way of doing it. But nonetheless, that becomes the model. Therefore, the Ani is outside, the Ashir is inside. But he says we need two verses. One verse to tell you about the Ani and the other verse to tell you about the Ashir. Now, by the way, there's all kinds of variations now. The arm of the first person, how far did it go? The arm of the second person, so on. But he's telling us that if the poor person puts his hand inside the house and takes it from the table, again, with the permission, hopefully, then that's one law. But if the person in the house hands it outside to him, that's a different law. Now, I don't know if you're convinced right now that that sounded like, oh, that's completely different, therefore I need two verses. That's what Rabbeinu Tam just now told us. I'm presuming this is Rabbeinu Tam as well, because Rabbeinu Tam spoke the first time, as I will continue to explain, or as I explain. So it does become a little strange. Again, you see the words over here. Again, we need both chad la'ani v'chad la'ashir. One regarding the person who's outside, one regarding the person's inside, and you're Charlotte's befuddled. V'chein b'chol toledot da'avot melachot. Lo chashin she'e b'mishkan el avot b'lvad. And when it comes to all of the melachot, you only needed the av melacha, the primary melacha, to be mentioned among the things done in the Mishkan. Right? Over here, even the toledah has to be connected to Mishkan. And again, Rabbeinu Tam is convinced always for one reason, and that is because it is a melechet grua. Now, I will tell you how I learned this when I learned this years and years ago. I was sitting in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class. And the reason I remember it is because he just said something which was I thought was so interesting, that something he normally didn't do. I know that Rabbi Soloveitchik is very well known for his philosophy and his knowledge of history and literature and whatever. In his Gemara Shir, that never came in. His Gemara Shir, you know what came in? The Rambam and Rashi and Tosfot and the Gemara. And very rarely did he ever quote anything historical, philosophical, literature, and it never came into the Gemara Shir itself. When he gave his public lectures, then he would display his dazzling mind and information that he had within it and say really interesting things. Here he did say something interesting. But first he explained what Melechet Gerua meant. And the way he explained it is most likely debatable, which means Rabbeinu Tam doesn't actually say what he says. Other Rishonim seem to say it the way that he's explaining it, including other members of Tosfot explain it this way, but let me say it already so that you understand. When I look at all the other melachot, something happens. Now, in order to really explain this, we will really get into Talmudic terminology. In the world of Brisk, which is where Rabbi Soloveitchik comes from, there's many kind of distinctions you can make, and that the whole thing is about making distinctions, categorizing, and therefore understanding how things work. So one of the most basic distinctions is something which is called a gavra and something which is called a cheftza. A gavra is a person, and a cheftza is an object. So I can ask regarding various obligations if the obligation is on the person or if the obligation is on the object. I won't give examples. Over here, by the Lametet Melachot, regarding, as far as I can tell, 38 of them, the object gets changed, and that's what makes it a Melacha. There's a change within the object. if the apple was connected to the tree, is now is disconnected to the tree, the object has been changed. There's a change in the object. So regarding... You've changed... The object was the combination, was the mixture, and now you've separated, you've changed the mixture. So the object, the mixture, is changed. Over here, it's not changed. I'll come back to what you said, or what I think you said in a second. He understood Rabbeinu Tam as saying that what can't you do on Shabbat? You can't do Melechet Machshevet. What is Melechet Machshevet? Creative work. What makes it creative work? That the object has been changed. So over here, when it comes to carrying or moving something, transporting something, the position, the way he understands Rabbeinu Tam's Melechet Gru'ah is that it's just moving something from place to place, but there's no Melechet Machshevet taking place, there's no creative work being taken place, or if you will, within brisk terminology, there's no change in the Heftza taking place. Now, what did Rabbi Soloveitchik say in this context that I thought was interesting? He said, again, he was born in a small town, which was called Prussian. Right? My grandfather happened to be born from Prussian, and knew Rabbi Soloveitchik's maternal grandfather, Rabbi Eliyahu Feinstein, who was an uncle of Rav Moshe Feinstein, but not through the Feinstein. There was a Feinstein who married a Feinstein. One was this Rabbi Eliyahu was a Levi. Rav Moshe was not a Levi. He then moved to another small town, which is called Chaslovich, which I suspect that had he not moved there, you never would have heard of it. But his father was then the rabbi of Chaslovich. And then, afterwards, there were really pogroms, and the whole security situation deteriorated, and they moved to a big city. If I'm not mistaken, they moved to Krakow then. And Krakow was a metropolis. That was a big city. And if you pay attention to the social changes taking place in Europe at that time, one of the things that was really taking place was the unions. Places were unionizing. So when he moves, he hears something that he never heard before. Okay, he hears about unions, whatever. But the unions themselves, the trade unions, did not want to accept the people who dealt with transportation as part of the trade union. Because the trade unions say, we are skilled workers, right? We're the ones who are, now you can fill in the sentence, we are building, we are making, we are fixing, whatever, and all these people are doing are transport. I mean, who transports? A donkey transports, which means, I'm sorry if you put it, that's certainly Middle East, I would say camels, but people don't believe we had camels then. But, and by the way, there's so much evidence about camels, it's not even funny. But the transportation of something is not creative work. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said when he heard the trade unions wanted to keep the transportation workers out of the trade unions, he goes, it's Rabbeinu Tam. It's Melechus Geruah. What's the issue over here? It's that there's no creativity. There's no Melech Machshevet. There's nothing creative taking place. And therefore, the trade unions were looking down on the transportation workers because they're not doing anything. They're just moving something from place to place. But it worked. His explanation stuck in my head. This is over 30 years. It stuck in my head about this. As I said, is it necessarily the only way to understand Rabbeinu Tam? No, Rabbeinu Tam does not say this black and white, but that's how he explained Rabbeinu Tam. Again, the brisk terminology would be that in the other melachot, there's a change in the heftza here. There's no change in the heftza. And when it comes to the transportation, it's just simply moving from place to place, which would seem to be a lack of Melechet Machshevet. It's not a real Malacha. Now, if it's not a real Malacha, because there's no change in the essence of the object, that's why you would need a verse to come and tell you that this is something that you can't do, because if you didn't have a verse to come and tell you that you can't do it, you never would have imagined this to be a Malacha. Good? Makes sense? That's the way that he explained it. Okay, so why is it nonetheless one of the Lametet Malachot? Good. So why is it one of that? And that's why it's a malacha gru'ah. It is still a malacha nonetheless. By the way, I tried to ask him what I think you asked him as well, and he did not like it at all. I said to him, why do you consider let's say the apple, you're carrying the apple, okay, I pick an apple off the tree, now I've changed the apple, the heftz has changed. It was part of a tree, now it's separate. Now I consider that a change. If I carry it from inside to outside, there's no change in the apple. I said, why are you considering the apple the chefza, the object? Why don't you consider the reshut, the object? That this reshut harabim didn't have an apple. When I carried it from inside to outside, I've changed the reshut harabim, I've changed the chefza. So he just simply, he did not like that. There are other reasons why what I'm saying is, what I suggested was completely not right, but I, at the time, I didn't know why it wasn't right. But it does have to do with other things in terms of technicalities within Shabbat. Now, we go back. Okay, let's go back now to source 15. The source 15 is troubling. After everything I've just now said, it's the beginning of the parasha. Vayakel Moshe kol adam bnei Yisrael v'yom aleihem elo drima shetziva Hashem la'asot otam. These are the things that you have to do. She'imim taseh melacha. 6 days you work, which is probably one of the hardest things for people to do in Yerushalayim. We'll explain more. Uviyom hashvi, and on the seventh day, Yelachim Kodesh, Shabbat Shabbaton LaHashem, Kol HaSabo Melacha Yumat. And then it continues, Lo Tiva'aru Eish B'chol Moshvotechem B'yom HaShabbat. Don't light fire on the seventh day. Now, everything I've been saying till now, I now can start asking myself all over again. Hold it a second. I have 39 Melachot. I've asked, why is it that the exception to the rule, and you have to say it clearly, was by carrying, because that's a melechet grua. Would anybody say that fire is a melechet grua? I mean, fire would seem to be, in a certain sense, to be actually the ultimate, the archetype of creative activity, the harnessing of fire, and so on. Now, first of all, if I drew a parallel between Shabbat and creation, this works out very nicely, because I have creation. What's the very first act of creation? Vayihi Or, right? Vayihi Or may be connected to this over here. And not only that, man's first action, according to the Gemara, which may actually be according to, I don't know, science, but man's first creative action was the creation of light, which he did on that first Saturday night. That's what the Yerushalmi says. So just like God creates on, you know, the first act of creation on that first Sunday or Saturday night was the statement by Yehi Or, and man's first act on the second Saturday night, when man is now here, is the creation of fire. And that's the reason the Rishalmi says, why we use fire in Havdalah. Because to commemorate Adam's using fire, and that was his first harnessing of creative energy. But for all the reasons I argued before, that or worked hard to say, that carrying is melechet gura, fire would not seem to be a melechet gerua, even though maybe I could make an argument that it is. Maybe I could make an argument that it is, but forgive me a second. On Yom Tov, we're not allowed to do work. Right? There's a prohibition of doing melacha on Yom Tov. Nonetheless, on Yom Tov, what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to cook and you're allowed to carry, which is very interesting, because these two very things, you can't do malacha, but you can do this. So maybe on some level, I can argue that also fire is a malachid gru'ah. Again, what makes it gru'ah? Because it's allowed to be done on Yom Tov. So it's not lighting, but it's still the use of it. So I accept that. I still want to go back, and despite what I just now said, I still want to say that my sense is that we have over here two extremes. One extreme is fire, which is, I think, really the apex of creativity, and the other is carrying, which is completely non-creative. And the fact that the two of them now stand out does create, you know, some kind of perhaps of a continuum. That I go from the most creative to the least creative, those are mentioned, and all the things in the others can then just be learnt out more generically that you can't do malacha. And I would suggest that. The problem may be that even though Rabbeinu Tam is insisting, and it's not just Rabbeinu Tam, even though Rabbeinu Tam says, okay, it's a melechet grua, it's an inadequate melacha, what do we all know? It's still a melacha. Now, let me try this again. When it comes to fire, the question becomes, why is fire taken out from the list? Why does fire have to be there? So I said, because it's the most creative. The Gemara actually asked the question, and let me read to you how the Gemara deals with it. Tana, you don't have this in front of you. This is Gemara in Yevota, Yevamot Avavam Ibed. Tana de Beir Rabbi Yishmael, lo tevaro eish b'chol moshvateichem, ma Talmud lomar, what does it come to teach us? Ma Talmud lomar, right? What do you mean, what does it come to teach us? Ilu Rabbi Yossi, l'lav, ilu Rabbi Natan, l'chalek. D'tanya havara l'lav yatzda div Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Natan amr l'chalek. Now what does it mean, l'lav o l'chalek? According to the position of Rabbi Yossi, it says, this is the way we would understand our verse, don't do any work on the Shabbos day. If this work will be put to death, and don't light fire on the Sabbath day. So why is it separated from the others? That fire would be considered to be, according to Rabbi Yossi, less than the rest of the melachot. And if you did light the fire, it's only considered a lav. Don't do it. And not included within the death penalty. Death penalty for all the melacha, but not for this. This would be an exception, and that's why it's mentioned. That's the way Rabbi Yossi understands it. It's one of the 39, but has a lower level. Now you have to ask yourself, why a lower level punishment? Or according to Rabbi Yossi, lechalek. What does lechalek mean? Lechalek would be to say, I could look at all 39 melachot as one deed, which means, you know, if somebody breaks Shabbat, again, all this is theoretical, in Talmudic times, times of the Sanhedrin, if you were warned, then you broke it anyway, there were witnesses and so on, which, by the way, you know, when Rabbi Kiva says he would get anybody off, I mean, you can get anybody off by reason of insanity, because, well, seriously, by reason of insanity, the only way you can be killed is if you have two witnesses telling you you'll be killed if you do it. The guy said he'll do it anyway. It means he's suicidal. It means there's something the matter with him. I mean, if you're going to break Shabbat, you do it after two witnesses warn you and after they're standing there watching you. I mean, a normal person would at least wait for them to walk away. I mean, there has to be something wrong with them. I'm being very serious about this. On the other hand, if somebody broke Shabbat accidentally, then they would bring a korban. Now, so you can't kill somebody more than once, generally, but you can, if somebody broke Shabbat by accident, so then you bring a korban. So what if you broke all 39 melachot in one Shabbat? You had a good day. Do you bring 39 offerings, or you did one thing wrong? You broke Shabbat by accident, even though it was 30, or you do the same one twice. Meaning, the second position, lechalek, means, no, these are 39, you can't do melacha, but they're 39 different melachot. And that's why fire is mentioned again, to teach you that all 39 are separate. Those are the two different opinions over here. So according to the first opinion, Rabbi Yossi's opinion, what do we end up understanding? That Shabbat, indeed, is less than the other melachot. It's only a lav. And I'm going to ask you again, H. So why is it less than the other one? So that goes back to Yom Tov, again, at least theoretically. Because in Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook, so therefore this is not a bona fide melacha.
You're not allowed to eat fire.
But you're allowed to cook. You're allowed to cook.
So
you want to say... But you're, but again, the fact that you can take fire, again, you can't light the fire, you can extend the fire. I accept that. I do accept that way of looking at it, because you could easily say that Mevashel is one of the other melachot, but still, the way the Mevashel takes place is with fire. Fire becomes the...
You allow transfer fire.
Yes.
And transfer fire changes the thing that has been transferred.
No, but still, the main thing is Tzarech Olcha Nefesh. Look, it could be I'm working too hard on this, but let me go back the other way for a second. Was there anybody who understood exactly what Rabbeinu Tam understood, and that this is an inadequate melacha, and therefore he sensed inadequacy?
Therefore,
he sensed inadequacy in his own role. Yeah, it's again. You don't know where I'm going with this, but
let. Also
no, regarding carrying, because Rabbeinu Tam only spoke about carrying.
Oh.
Only spoke about carrying. Again, I'll say it again. My thinking is that really fire is the most creative, and most things can be done with it. And Hotzah is the least creative. And if I deal with, I have this continuum. As I said, I'm comfortable with saying it like this. If we take a look, let's look at really the last couple of sources. Source 18. V'kila Aharon uvanav l'chasot et hakodesh et kol klei hakodesh bin soa machaneh v'acharechen yavo b'nei kahat l'sa'et v'lo yigul hakodesh meitu ele mas'a b'nei kahat pa'o amoed. The ones who had the task of carrying the things for the Mishkan were the b'nei kahat, That was their job. The Mekahat was, they were the transport. So on the one hand, do I say that they were also involved in creative activity, or do I say that they're the donkeys? I'm sorry for putting it that way, but you know, I can look at it different ways. In source 19, what was their job? They carried things. They were the carriers. Then you realize something. What do you realize when you look at source number 20? V'yikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi. Korach comes from Kahat. Korach, he's the one who wants to be Kohen Gadol. He's the one who wants the most holy job in the Mishkan. Why? Because he perceives that what he has is the most inadequate malacha whatsoever involved in it. Why? Because he's only carrying. He's not doing anything else. So I'm saying, when you realize this, what again, carrying where it comes from, where it was used, and so on, and then you realize where Korach is Korach. Korach is saying, no, this is a malacha grua. When Rabbeinu Tam said it's a malacha grua, what did he say? It's still creative activity, and it's still one of the 39 malachot, and therefore whoever's doing it is still doing creative activity. When Korach is complaining, again, it seems to me this is the background of his complaint. His cousin Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and he's doing the most important thing. What is he doing? He's only carrying. Now somebody, by the way, what's he carrying? Among other things, they're carrying the Aaron. So I could say, hold it, the person carrying the Aaron is carrying the most holy thing, and carrying, meaning, is transportation something which is really completely inadequate? Is only the person who creates something or makes something that person, or maybe carrying something? I mean, I would assume if somebody's carrying the luchod and somebody's carrying, right, that there would be this incredible sense of holiness involved in this. But Korach seems to look at carrying, I don't even want to say as melechet grua, and doesn't see it as being real work. This is not dignified work. There's nothing holy about this. And that then begins the whole process from saying, I want the holiest job involved because I have the least holy job over here. But I'm saying all this comes back from the same point of Rabbeinu Tam. Ultimately, what would Rabbeinu Tam say? I mean, to the trade unions, this is, meaning when you say malacha grua, what are you really saying? It is a malacha. It is a malacha. What did Rabbeinu Tam teach? Okay, we need extra emphasis by this. We need even two verses to come teach us this, because there are going to be people who are not going to feel that it's a malacha. And why are they not going to feel it's a malacha? So again, as I said, it could be that no change takes place. They just figure, you know, a donkey can carry things. A person doesn't need to carry it. Although I can tell you, the one time when I did travel to California carrying a Sefer Torah with me, you don't just feel that, oh, okay, I'm just, you know, carrying, you know, the mailman could have done this. You don't feel that way at all. You feel that you're carrying something which is holy with you. And by the way, even the on El Al, the stewardesses, and they were very excited. I mean, there was real authentic excitement of real awe that there's something very holy over here. We need to treat it with respect, and they made sure to put to find a respectful place to put the Torah going through, at least in Ben Gurion, going through security, carrying a Torah. Believe they just opened up doors and whatever. So if you ever want to smuggle anything, the way... no, I take no responsibility for that. No, but I think the main point is that anybody involved in the whole process of the Mishkan, from the holiest to, quote-unquote, the least, really all should have seen themselves as being involved in the holy thing. But now we realize that there was one malacha that was this... I don't know what to say, the forgotten, looked down upon, inadequate, or you have a better word yet for this? This malacha grua, this, they saw it as inferior work, and therefore there was the sense of second-class citizens, and he can continue the whole argument. But I do think that all this ends up becoming the background for Korach's rebellion, because that's what he feels. He only carries it.